Welcome back to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan's era of legal cannabis sales is in full swing, with tens of millions of dollars registered for just the first few weeks. All that money, would it surprise you to know that a lot of it never goes to a bank? Cannabis is one of those industries that traditional business banks won't touch. Its profits may be legal in Michigan, but federal regulation makes handling the money very sticky. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed legislation called the Safe Banking Act to address this issue, but we wanted a little bit more grassroots reaction. The Om of Medicine has been providing medical cannabis to customers in Ann Arbor for 10 years. It now handles sales of recreational adult use as well. Lisa Conine is the company's community outreach coordinator. Lisa, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
When the business got started, did the owners realize that they wouldn't be making traditional bank deposits?
Well, it was definitely a risky endeavor just in general, but from the beginning, they worked with a bank and things were fine for a little while until they weren't fine. And then from that point on, they knew that they couldn't be honest about their business with banking, even for personal accounts and things like that. So it was always a risk right from the beginning.
So does that mean that there weren't bank deposits made after a certain point?
So there were. It was just, you know, under a different business name.
What are some of the less obvious considerations of running a business without a formal bank relationship?
The biggest issue is that public safety. So the fact that if you can't deposit your money in a normal manner, then you have cash laying around and that puts your employees at risk and also the people that you serve. And so that's a huge issue that comes up for all cannabis businesses and how they want to navigate moving that cash around to keep people safe. And then also when it comes to paying things like your normal bills or paying taxes.
Payroll taxes, unemployment.
Exactly, yeah. So all those things just make it even harder to just operate as a normal business on top of, you know, operating a business that's still federally illegal. There's a lot of challenges that people are faced when they enter the industry. A lot of people think that, you know, the cannabis industry is just a big moneymaker, but there's actually a ton of roadblocks and a lot of challenges that people face that not a lot of people realize. It's not for the faint-hearted, that's for sure.
I heard that Om is transitioning to work with a bank in a little bit more transparent kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how the company came to that decision.
Yeah, so since we obtained our medical license last year, once we were licensed medically, once the whole industry started to get licensed medically, it was coming from the gray market into a license framework, then a couple of smaller banks and institutions in Michigan were willing to work with cannabis businesses. So the biggest difference there is that we're able to be honest with them about our business and what we do. And as long as we pay extra fees, then they'll go through the rigmarole that might be required there. But before that, it wasn't really the case.
I feel like people saw those lines in December when adult use recreational cannabis first became a thing and just assumed that it was a new way to print money.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely exciting. All the people that are wanting to try out cannabis and how the industry is growing, but there's still a ton of issues that the industry faces, again, including the banking issue and also a lesser known issue is the tax code 280E that cannabis businesses fall under, and so that creates a lot more challenges for operating as well.
How are cannabis businesses taxed right now in Michigan?
Yeah, so there are taxes on sales for the medical program and the adult use program, but then there's a tax code called 280E, which basically defines that if you are a business selling a Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 substance, then you are not able to make normal business deductions like other businesses. So that makes it very expensive to operate and then also very tricky when you have to pay those taxes in cash because of the banking issue. So they're connected. And so, again, that's a lot of the work that we do when we're lobbying in D.C. around these two issues is trying to get these two issues resolved. So, again, cannabis businesses can operate like any other business because they're here. They're here to stay. They're already a growing industry. And so we just want to move forward and kind of clean up these issues so we can move on to the larger issues at hand.
That's crazy to think about. Are we talking about walking up to the Department of Revenue with a bag of cash?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. As I mentioned, the House of Representatives has passed a Safe Banking Act. Do you feel that the legislation there to provide at least a pathway for banks to legally deal with cannabis businesses would address the problems that OMB has dealt with?
Most definitely. Yeah, we actually, every year, myself and one of the co-founders of OMB, we go down to D.C. each year and we lobby Congress around banking reform and reform on a number of cannabis issues because of exactly what you said. It would solve a lot of issues that we face, just providing those safeguards for institutions so they don't have to fear penalty and so we can operate like any other business in the world, basically, that can just deposit their money and not have to worry about it. So that would be just a huge thing that we could get cleared up. It's a very small issue when you think about it in terms of the rest of the issues that are facing cannabis through legislation. This is a bipartisan supported issue. It's something that should be very easy to get taken care of so we can move on to other issues. And that's kind of what we're pushing for, is it's about time that we clear this up so we can look at things like descheduling, more research for cannabis, social equity, things like that.
There's something so odd about contemplating an America in which there are businesses providing cannabis for consumers, providing revenue for the state off of cannabis mm-hmm. sales. There are even some publicly traded cannabis companies now at the national level, while in other parts of the United States, there are still some people getting sent to jail for possession. Is it right for the banking piece of this to get ahead of where we are in terms of criminal law and just basic sales regulation?
Yeah, so that's really something that has been debated widely in the cannabis movement as well. And something that's really important to point out is that when we're looking at things like social equity, so individuals who have been most impacted by the war on drugs wanting to then enter the cannabis industry, if they don't have access to normal business loans, then there's no chance of opening a business. And when you can't bank normally, then you don't have that access to capital. You'd need something like a capital investor or someone to bring in money to help you start your business. And not a lot of people have access to that. And so it's something that a lot of advocates within the movement are pushing for safe banking reform, because it can forward things like social equity and actually help people enter in, but also because, you know, there's a term called radical incrementalism. And so trying to take the wins when we can get them, but not leaving behind things like criminal justice reform. All of these advocates are also pushing for things like the MORE Act, which would completely deschedule cannabis and offer reparations for those communities on a national level. And lots of efforts are being done around expungement and also trying to legalize in all the states that are left that still have complete prohibition. So it's not one or the other. It's pushing it all together as a unified movement. And so that's something that, you know, at OMB that we're really passionate about, is supporting all of those pieces of legislation, not just something that would benefit our business alone.
Lisa, thanks for coming in and talking with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Lisa Conine with the OMB of Medicine. For a deeper look at the regulatory piece of this issue, we've invited Patricia Herndon to join us, Executive Vice President for Government Relations with the Michigan Bankers Association. Patty, nice to have you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And Brian Calley is back. He's former Lieutenant Governor of the state of Michigan, now with the Small Business Association of Michigan. Brian, nice to hear from you, too.
Pleasure to be with you.
Brian, the state was on track to legalize cannabis for quite some time before last December. Why is it that we still did not have a banking structure in place when cannabis became legal?
And it's not just in Michigan. This is a nationwide issue. The main problem is with federal laws. So even when states legalize cannabis, the federal law still prohibits a lot of activities, or technically makes them illegal or keeps them illegal. And of course, banks have to follow federal law. And it's put them in a very awkward position. Customers who need banking services, the idea of having extraordinary amounts of cash and transporting it back and forth and making transactions that way, it's not ideal in any way, shape, or form. And yet that's the situation that a lot of proprietors that are operating legally under state law find themselves in.
Patty, what would you say constrains banks from working with dispensaries at this point?
Well, I think it's the fact that while we have a state law that allows it both on a medical and on a recreational level, that we still have federal law that prohibits it. And so when we look at any kind of banking of any kind of federally illegal drug, which it is still considered a Schedule I drug, when we look at that, it creates issues for bank compliance for anti-money laundering and Bank Secrecy Act. So it is a rather large, rather important issue for us that we are out of compliance at the federal level when we do that.
Patty, would you say that the reticence banks feel on this issue is more due to their concerns about the regulation or more of a public perception thing?
I think it's fair for both. I think ultimately the decision whether or not they choose to bank it comes down to the regulatory piece. I think that there are also other components to the public perception. There are very few people that just don't give a darn about marijuana banking. Most people are very supportive of it or very against it. And so they think that marijuana businesses either have no place or are the best thing that ever happened. So we want to make sure that as an industry, we are not making morality decisions on who or what we bank. We believe that there should be equal access to banking of legal entities. We believe that it makes the economy and commerce system much more robust and transparent, and that we need to have something that is robust and transparent for any of our state legal entities that we're banking or choose to bank.
Is there any mechanism by which banks who do choose to work with cannabis businesses can, for lack of a better term, clean the money?
Well, it's a conundrum, because as soon as the money leaves the entity's hands, it becomes a money laundering scenario. So if I have a Herndon's dispensary and I pay my accountant to go through my things, or I pay my irrigation company, then that is money laundering at that point. We want to make sure that they have an opportunity to do so in a responsible manner. So if Bank of Herndon is banking that irrigation company, that we are aware of that and we're able to, at that point, at least have some transparency around where that money came from. And we're able to ensure then that it came from a state legal entity, not a cartel or someone else that's funding some other underground marijuana industry.
And I think this is an important distinction to keep in mind, is that we think of it in terms of you have a dispensary, the dispensary makes money and then needs to make a deposit. That's pretty straightforward. A bank would have an easy way of identifying that that a company that does this for their main source of business, they know what they are. They know what the industry code is for their customer. But what is much more complicated and still technically illegal under federal law is when a bank accepts money from an accountant, from an advertising firm, from a lawn care service, from any professional services that might be servicing a marijuana business and therefore have received money that was originated from marijuana sales.
The secondary recipients of that money.
Exactly. So the secondary recipients make the deposit in the bank. And it's not, I don't think it's very realistic. It's certainly not fair. You would expect a bank to know that deep into each of these transactions where all the cash originated from. And that's why it's important that federal law changes. At the Small Business Association, we have some of our members who are in the business directly, but we have many more members who provide services to this industry in different ways. And for all of them to have this risk, this exposure for an industry that the voters of Michigan have spoken with a very loud and forceful voice through the ballot box, they've decided to make it legal. It's an undue burden, and it's not reasonable.
As we've mentioned, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Safe Banking Act last year, but the chair of the Senate Banking Committee, Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho, has some reservations about this bill. Would either of you two have any predictions about whether or not we'll see movement on it this year?
We are hoping to see that. We've been in really regular conversations with the senator through the banking industry, both from the Michigan Bankers Association and the American Bankers Association, helping them work through some of the detail. There has been some bipartisan support in the House for that bill. It was voted out last year and had some pretty good support overall. But Senator Crapo had some concerns that were raised by some of the other amendments that were tried that folks had tried to attach to that. A lot of it having to do with the concern that policymakers have on the actual regulation of cannabis. We've shared that while these are legitimate concerns the policymakers have, we also want to ensure that the Safe Banking Act just addresses cannabis banking, that we're not trying to regulate products outside of banking in any kind of statute that would impact the banking piece. So bringing banking to this neither supports nor discourages cannabis in any of the states where people have spoken that they want it, but it does create some greater knowns around it, and it would, by the virtual transparency of it, help battle having some of those nefarious characters and cartels and others in the system.
Brian Kelly, do you see the current state of banking regulation for cannabis businesses affecting the normal growth of the industry? Is this complicating the normal cycle of consolidation that the industry might need to follow? I mean, you've written about some of the separate issues around how and whether dispensaries will let their employees interact with unions. What about the banking piece of it?
With banking in particular, this is just a core service that every single business needs. And it's difficult to imagine any scenario where you have regular and maximum growth of the industry without access to regular banking services. So I think it is absolutely a hindrance. But it's also a serious security concern as well. If you look at the way that cash money moves across the landscapes, particularly large amounts of it, you'll see it moves in armored vehicles. I mean, this is an important aspect of the security question in front of us. And to expect people that are in a business that is already in some ways, I mean, it's vulnerable, it's growing, it's brand new, and a lot of decisions that have to be made. And to put on top of that the risk to their employees that they have to transport extraordinary amounts of cash by, I mean, even what you might consider a relatively modest deposit by a lot of business standards, say $20,000 or $25,000, wouldn't be unusual for a small factory to have a deposit of that size. But if it was all in cash, think of the danger that you're putting that employee in. I think it would make it more difficult to attract talent into the industry, and it would also make it more difficult to manage. So there's a cost to this for sure. And really the holdup in getting this passed in the federal level, it really does seem to be a tendency toward wanting to relitigate the issue itself and not really about the banking aspect of it. And it would be best to really separate that out and say, regardless what you think of this industry, if you like it or you hate it or whatever, it would be better for the purposes of taxation and transparency and accountability and in controlling crime and security of employee. All of these things point toward legalization of the banking around the industry, at least in the states where the voters have decided to legalize it.
We've been talking with Patricia Herndon, Executive Vice President for Government Relations at the Michigan Bankers Association, and Brian Kelly of the Small Business Association of Michigan. Thank you both for sharing some thoughts on this. It's a really complex topic.
It is. Thank you.
Pleasure to be with you.